Raymond Graham Swing.
Good afternoon. 17 days ago this morning, Neville Chamberlain made history by declaring a state of war in a broadcast. And what you have just heard is a speech of Adolf Hitler attempting to declare a state of peace in a broadcast. Poland has collapsed, partly because it was unable to withstand the Hitler motorized columns, partly because it never was able to get its aeroplanes into the air, partly because the Soviet Union marched in from the rear, though that was the least of the reasons, and partly because of Poland's own inability to use the strength it had and the defenses it might have held. The collapse of Poland had been expected, though not in 17 days, and the peace offensive had been expected, and it was fitting that it should have been launched as Hitler launched it in the once free city of Danzig, which was Hitler's first visit to that city since the war began. Now, in analyzing this speech briefly, it's well to start with a statement of what was expected from it, and then to see whether it fulfilled the expectations and whether it failed to go so far, and finally to see whether it went further. The expectations were, first, that Hitler would tell the British and French that the collapse of Poland had absolved them of any reason to continue fighting. This he has most decidedly done. And secondly, it was expected that Hitler would explain that Poland,
which ended with no victors and no vanquished, has led temporarily to its being torn from the mother country. After that war, which many of our former opponents seem to have forgotten, a peace was established, a peace that was dictated to us, and which therefore did not solve any of the existing problems. It only created many new ones. The most important one of these problems was overlooked over a long time, the problem which consists in the fact that 82 million Germans live in this zone and they will continue to live. Alluding to Premier Chamberlain's recent speech, where he said that England had lost all confidence. In the words of German statesman, Chancellor Hitler said that Germany, on her part, had lost all confidence in the promises of the men who were responsible for the Treaty of Versailles. One had to wonder, Hitler went on by saying, how such nonsensical decisions could have been reached as those of Versailles. Danzig was one of its victims. All the territories then taken from Germany and given to Poland were truly German, as shown by all the plebiscites of subsequent times. Poland was unable to maintain the cultural traditions created in those territories by the German race, and the consequence was that they suffered a setback into barbarism. Poland was a police and military dictatorship which caused untold suffering to the German minority, sufferings that were so unspeakable that they could not be mentioned. In spite of all that, Hitler said, he had made an effort to bring about a bearable solution. First, on the western borders of Germany, then on those in the south, he succeeded. With Poland likewise, he made an attempt. The arrangement entered into with the late Marshal Pilsudski, then head of state of Poland, never was meant to recognize the stipulations of Versailles. But after Pilsudski's death, measures of persecution were barbarically inaugurated against the German minority in Poland. The world that expressed so much sympathy for the Jews expelled from Germany never cared for these helpless Germans. To us, Hitler said, it was unbearable to see those minorities ill-treated by a nation so much below our own. We had to witness the systematic polonization of as Germanic a city as Danzig. No other power would ever have tolerated such a situation. So I have tried to find a solution, and I have made proposals which were more than moderate. As a matter of fact, I used too much restraint, but I made these proposals to avoid a conflict. The spring this year, in what state of mind the Polish government must have been when it turned down these proposals, I don't know. They answered by ordering mobilization. Acts of terrorism against the Germanic minorities set in. Some Polish papers insisted that the problem was not Danzig, but East Prussia and even Pomerania, and they discussed where the German army should be defeated on German soil. Who, Hitler said, could ever think that Germans would stand for that kind of provocation? Perhaps the Poles were not responsible for it themselves. As a matter of fact, the guarantees given them by a major power were responsible for these grave mistakes. The responsible powers incited Poland to resistance. They made it plain that Poland was not the principal issue. Such men as Churchill, Eden, Duff Cooper, and their kind are now the government in England, Hitler went on by saying. These men who tolerated and provoked war propaganda over a long period of time in totalitarian countries, such freedom of speech is not tolerated. In democratic countries, criminal activities of this sort seem to be freely indulged in. Despite all that, Hitler said, he offered to negotiate. He waited for a Polish delegate to come to Berlin. He made a final proposal, and nothing happened. There is a limit to all patience, Hitler went on by saying at this point. For years I had looked on, for years, while the German minorities in Poland were being persecuted. Finally, I had to adopt the only language the Poles seemed to understand. Yet, a last chance was given when Mussolini submitted a compromise proposal and France accepted it. But England chose to deliver an ultimatum to us. They mistook the Germany of 1918 for the Germany of today. But the Germany of today will never accept ultimata. I have never sent an ultimatum myself. Germany is not willing to accept such language. If Poland has chosen war, it was because others have driven her into it. Perhaps because they thought it to be good business. It will, I think, Hitler said, not be good business, but will prove to be a grave disappointment to them. Now Poland is beaten. The Lord has beaten her. Their men, their horses, and their carriages. Endless numbers of prisoners were taken. Their remains will have to capitulate in a very few days, or they will be cut to pieces. Those who thought they knew so much about conditions in Germany will now see how they were mistaken. Marshal Ritz Smitley, the commanding officer of the Polish army, has now arrived in Czernowitz rather than in Berlin. The German army has done incomparable wonders. For every bomb thrown on the German city, there will be 10 thrown on those of the enemy. That our opponents know, and they are afraid of retaliation when they speak of humanitarianism. I pay my respect to the Polish soldiers who fought bravely, but their leaders were not up to their task. Unfortunately, some of the dirtiest deeds were committed. Thousands of German civilians and war prisoners were martyred. Not one of the democratic statesmen found it necessary to protest against the frank terrors among the Polish people. Now, Hitler continued, conditions have been established where someday, perhaps, a new arrangement can be arrived at with representatives of the Polish people. England complains that we have come to terms with Soviet Russia. after they have failed coming to terms with them. Russia remains what she is, but Germany also will remain what she is. But neither wants to sacrifice one single man for the interests of the Western democracies. We have both learned enough in the late war. For us both, it is best that we settle our own affairs among ourselves. Those statesmen of England who criticize us and claim that we want to dominate Europe now can see for themselves that our goals are limited. These goals are so limited that no conflict need ever arise between Russia and Germany. Now the British can see that we do not plan to conquer the Ukraine, but from our real goals, we shall never be deterred. As far as the future of the formerly Polish territory is concerned, Hitler said that would depend on the two countries primarily interested in it, that is, Russia and Germany. Russia and Germany, Hitler said, will carry out their plans, which will bring about better conditions. If England now declares that she will not stand for such plans and will fight them, if necessary, in a 3 or 4 year war, Hitler said he had this to reply. Germany has now established definitive borders, west and south and east. I have no claims against either France or England, as I have said many times. With Italy, I have established lasting friendship. The same I have attempted to achieve with France. And with England, too, I wanted to maintain true friendship. If all these offers are refused and England insists on war, I simply want to reply that Poland will never resurrect as the country that she was under the Versailles Treaty. For this shall vouch not only Germany, but also Russia. However, England now says that the real aim of this war is the downfall of the Hitler regime. Such a statement I consider a compliment, for praise from them would only be shameful. I'm proud to be attacked by the British, for that shows that my regime is the best for the German people. They must consider the German people as lacking in character as much as they do themselves, and as being of the same stupidity as their own, if they think they can mislead us with such ridiculous propaganda. They should learn from us how to do propaganda. Their own people will find out for themselves that they are being ruled by a small group of profiteers. If they say this war will last 3 years, I only feel sorry for the French soldiers. It will depend a little on us whether it will really last 3 years, but even if it should last 3 years, capitulation will not be the end on our side. Not after 3, and not after 4 or 5 or 6 or even 7 years. We shall not disintegrate, Hitler continued, but those empires may that live only off the oppression of others. Millions are to be exposed to death because they don't like our system of government. How their own systems will stand up under this pressure remains to be seen, for their peoples may someday see the light. We take up the gauntlet, Hitler said, and we shall fight just as they fight us. We shall not refrain from fighting their women and children if they fight ours. And we might then not even be able to spare the neutrals. And we may have to adopt means where we cannot be opposed at all. In the end, there will always be only one certainty, that is that this Germany of today will never capitulate. We have been threatened with extermination, so we know what we are facing. Hitler then continued, some say there is not the same enthusiasm among our people today as there was in 1914. But I think their enthusiasm is greater now even than it was at that time, only it is not so superficial. We are determined to fight this battle, and we only hope that Almighty God, who has blessed our arms so visibly, will enlighten the other nations so they will see for themselves what tragedy they may bring down upon themselves. In his concluding remarks, Chancellor Hitler intimated that he had now achieved his goal of uniting all Germans in one great Reich, and he affirmed that never would this new community waver in maintaining this newly won national unity, which it would defend to the last drop of blood.
This is London, calling in the overseas service of the BBC. Here is the news. Messages of encouragement and appreciation have passed tonight between Britain and Poland. From the Polish ambassador in Paris to his countrymen, and from Dr. Benesch to the Czechoslovaks. And once again, the German Freedom Station has been broadcasting to the German people. The message from the people of Britain to the people of Poland was broadcast by the BBC tonight. We said that Poland was once again the standard bearer of liberty in Europe, and that we, as her ally, would continue the struggle for the restoration of her liberty. In reply, the President of Warsaw, in the name of the population of the city and of the whole Polish nation, thanked the British people for their message and the assurance that we shall fight together the common enemy. He declared that the brutal bombardment of Warsaw and other towns and the murder of thousands of women and children was being carried out mercilessly, and he felt entitled to make a new appeal. When will the effective help of Britain and France come to relieve us from this terrible situation, he asked. We are waiting for it. Colonel Lipinski of the Warsaw Military Command, in a broadcast talk shortly after, referred to the British message and declared, "Our answer to it is, we are not alone. We are honored to fight in such good company." The Polish ambassador in Paris also broadcast a message to Poland tonight. He declared the Polish government had to seek safety because of the treacherous action of Russia. But nevertheless, Poland would continue to fight with Britain and France. In the general war which German rapacity has provoked, the hardest task has been allotted to us, he said. In every place where Polish people are living, he continued, new formations of Polish military formations must be raised, and the Polish forces will fight side by side with the Allies. In the message which he broadcast from this country to the Czechoslovak people, Dr. Benesch, the second president of Czechoslovakia, urged them to help in the fight against Nazi tyranny. The mad barbarism of Nazi Germany in Czechoslovakia, Poland, and even in Germany itself, he said, shows that the Nazi leaders are fully aware that their regime is nearly at an end. Dr. Benesch declared that it was the duty of Czechoslovakia to prove to the whole world that they were ready to help with all their energy. And he said that the whole world was looking to the Czechoslovaks to deal hard blows day after day at the enemy. A broadcast tonight from the German Freedom Station urged the German people to sabotage the war machine and to destroy Hitler. The sooner we get rid of our criminal regime, the broadcast continued, the sooner shall we have peace. The announcer alleged that over 1,000 members of the Nazi Party had been executed for sabotage and anti-war activities since the war began. The broadcast ended with a call to Austrian Catholics to defend their faith against the Nazi regime and to fight for a free Austria. The Habas correspondent in Copenhagen reports another outburst of Nazi terrorism in Czechoslovakia, and tonight the German wireless admitted that many arrests have been made there. According to the Habas correspondent, the Gestapo made hundreds of arrests after a revolt had broken out in the great Skoda arms works. Many of the arrested men, it is said, have been executed, and their families have been warned not to wear mourning or to speak of the death of their relatives. Other executions are said to have taken place at Žilina in Slovakia. Although the Polish government is now on Romanian territory, and German and Russian troops occupy most of Poland, yet the Polish army is still holding out on two or three fronts. According to French reports from Romania, Polish armies are still resisting on the River Bug in the north, round Warsaw, and at Lvov in the southeast. It is also reported that German warships have been shelling a body of Polish troops which is holding out northwest of Gdynia. The resumption of the German attack on Warsaw, which was announced last night, has evidently taken the form of a heavy artillery bombardment. Though Warsaw broadcasts report the German Air Force has been seen much less than in recent days. The Poles conclude that this is because much of it has been moved to the Western Front. On land, the Poles say that repeated attacks on Praga, the eastern suburb of Warsaw, have been driven off in heavy losses. Although the Germans claim to have smashed the Polish army west of Warsaw, the Poles say that this army has driven a wide wedge between the German forces. They also report that Polish irregular forces are doing effective fighting in the German-occupied territory. They are said to be well-armed and to have the help of the civilians. The German troops in Poland are tonight reported to be withdrawing from some of the advanced positions they had occupied, so as to make way for the Russians. Kaunas messages say that they are leaving Białystok, and it is believed that Brest-Litovsk is also to be left to the Russians. Discussions are said to be proceeding about which of them should have Lvov, though neither of them have yet captured it. In the north, Russian infantry today entered Doma in support of the mechanized units which had reached the town last night. In spite of the Russian occupation of the town, Lithuania is again putting forward her claims to it, for she has claimed Doma as the capital of Lithuania ever since 1919. An inspired speech broadcast from Kaunas tonight said that Doma must be returned sooner or later, though it would have to be by peaceful means, as Lithuania was remaining neutral. The uneasiness of the Baltic states at Russia's advance on Poland was increased tonight by a statement from the official Russian agency saying that Polish submarines are being sheltered in certain Baltic ports. Estonia, particularly, is accused of conniving at the escape of the Polish submarine Ortsud, which slipped out of Tallinn harbour last night after having been interned there. The Soviet fleet in the Baltic has been given instructions to stop any submarines escaping from neutral ports and to prevent any possible diversions by such submarines. Rumours reaching Stockholm say even that Estonia is being blockaded and that no ships are being allowed to enter Tallinn. It is believed that the Estonian minister in Moscow may seek an interview with Monsieur Molotov to discuss the escape of the submarine Otsu. The Latvian government has declared that no foreign submarines have been in Latvian ports since the beginning of the war, and that it would be impossible for them to take refuge there. The government of Finland today recalled a number of reserves of colours. The four northern powers, which have been conferring at Copenhagen, Denmark, Sweden, Norway and Finland, have issued another statement affirming their neutrality and their determination to maintain normal commercial relations even with belligerents. They also deny that they have received any note from Great Britain making demands about their interpretation of neutrality. This disposes of the German propaganda allegations that Britain had made certain demands to neutral states. In the south of Poland, the Russian troops have reached Zalesziki, which means that about a third of Poland's frontier with Romania has been closed. A Romanian delegation is reported to have met the Russian military authorities to discuss the admittance of refugees into Romania. In general, the Russian advance does not seem to have been resisted. Some eyewitnesses reaching Romania say that Polish and Russian troops have been fraternizing, though other reports say that there has been fighting at some points. A force of about 1,000 Czech legionaries is reported to have been taken prisoner by the Russians, though its leader, General Pchala, has been conducted to the Romanian frontier by a Soviet officer after being detained for 12 hours. A Moscow report says that the bigger states in the Polish territory now occupied by Russia are already being split up. The Red Star, the newspaper of the Red Army, reports that the peasants have been instructed to take over the land and to turn their cattle into the landlord's fields. The number of refugees, both civilian and military, who have now arrived in Romania is given as 30,000. They include the members of the Polish government and the diplomats accredited to it. Both the French and British missions have left Czernowitz and Bucharest. Contrary to widely published reports, it was stated at the Polish embassy in London tonight that Marshal Smigli-Ridge, commander-in-chief of the Polish army, has not gone to Romania, but that he is still directing military operations in Poland. A French war communique about fighting on the Western Front says tonight that a local attack which the Germans had launched in the Zweibrücken area has been repulsed. The communique mentions that there was German air activity in the same region. During the last few days, two or three of these small attacks have been made by the Germans, and military observers think that they may be intended to accustom the German troops to attack in trench warfare in preparation for a large-scale counterattack later. Artillery duels continue, and it is reported that French guns are proving superior to German field artillery of equal caliber, and that the Germans have been compelled to withdraw several of their batteries. The Germans are mainly concerned at present in the protection of Saarbrücken. Many troops, it is reported, are being moved towards the Saar district, and thousands of workers are toiling feverishly to finish the Siegfried Line fortifications. Herr Hitler made a speech in Danzig today which followed familiar lines. After denouncing the Treaty of Versailles and repeating the familiar German propaganda about terrorism in Poland, he attacked Britain and France and said that they were really responsible for Let me repeat that sentence again, please. Herr Hitler made a speech in Danzig today which followed familiar lines. After denouncing the Treaty of Versailles and repeating the familiar German propaganda about terrorism in Poland, he attacked Britain and France and said that they were really responsible for what the Nazis regard as the intractability of the Poles. With reference to the advance of Russian troops, Herr Hitler repeated that Russia remains Bolshevik and Germany Nazi, but that they had found it best to reach an understanding. He offered that as proof that German aspirations were limited. It was for Germany and Russia, as the two most interested countries, to see how Poland would look in the future. They were agreed that she would not rise again in the form laid down by the Treaty of Versailles. Herr Hitler concluded, as had been expected, by saying he had nothing to ask of Great Britain and France. If Britain went on with the war, he said, her real aim must be to destroy the German government. And Germany would not give in, even if the war lasted 7 years. A commentary on Herr Hitler's speech issued in London tonight points out that it was full of his usual crass misstatements. Moreover, the tale of Herr Hitler's broken promises is so long that he can scarcely expect Great Britain to believe that German aspirations are limited and that Germany has no further aspirations in the West. The commentary goes on to quote a number of Herr Hitler's earlier diatribes against Bolshevism, comparing them with his present statement that it is now in the best interests both of Germany and Russia to have an understanding. Defending Britain's economic warfare, it is stated that there is no question of Britain waging war on German women and children. For the German government has already declared that there are ample stocks of food in Germany. So the restriction of the imports of raw materials is not a measure of which the German government can legitimately complain. Finally, the London commentary says that Herr Hitler's account of the circumstances of the outbreak of war is a travesty of facts. He was determined on war, it says, and hoped to the last that Great Britain would not fulfill her treaty obligations to Poland. The German secret police are keeping a close watch on all people with wireless sets, according to a report from Copenhagen. People in Germany who are suspected of listening to any but German broadcasts are likely, if they go out, to find that their sets are being smashed up when they get home. Apparently, experience has shown that this is the quickest and best method of stopping illegal listening. Many of the survivors of the aircraft carrier Courageous, which was sunk on Sunday night by a German submarine, reached home today. Their stories indicate that the time and weather were in favor of the submarine commander, and that the Courageous sank very quickly after she'd been hit. One of the survivors, a stoker, tells how he was playing cards with his mates in the stoker's mess deck. There was a loud explosion, and the next thing he knew, he was shoulder deep in water. Almost immediately, the lights went out, and the ship began to list so greatly that it was hardly possible to stand. According to a gunnery officer, the list may well have been the reason why a number of men failed to jump clear. I am sure that a number were killed in their jumps, he said. On deck, there was complete calm until the cry went up, every man for himself. The captain calmly issued orders until the last minute, and when last seen was standing on his bridge, saluting the white ensign. A 16-year-old rating tells how he was in his hammock when the Courageous was hit. I groped my way to the deck, he said. There was no panic. I slid down the side of the ship to within 6 feet of the water and stayed there with other men for about 10 minutes. The bows were steadily going down, so I jumped into the water and swam towards the destroyer. According to another rating, it is unlikely that anyone was saved from the submarine. The destroyers dropped depth charges, he said, and we saw the U-boat blown straight out of the water and then disappear. Many of the survivors paid tribute to the fine work done by the rescue boats. A petty officer on one of the destroyers is said to have dived 10 times from his ship to bring exhausted men on board. A 150 American survivors of the Athenia left the Clyde today on board the liner Orizaba, which had been specially chartered by the American government. The nationality of the ship is fully indicated by 2 huge United States flags painted on both sides. These will be floodlit at night. It is reported from Finland that 2 Finnish steamers, the Vega and the Suomen Poika, were seized by the Germans several days ago and have been taken to Hamburg. Both ships are bound for Hull and carried cargoes of wood products. A message from New York states that 13 passengers of German and Czechoslovakian nationality were removed from the Italian liner Rex before she sailed for Europe today. The Italian shipping line has passed an order denying passage to persons with German or Czechoslovak passports, with the object, as it is believed, of preventing the searching of Italian ships on the high seas by the British Navy. all the vessels of the London, Midland, and Scottish Railway Company, which ply between England and Eire, are to sail under the Red Ensign. This has brought about a settlement of a dispute between the company and the crews of these vessels who declined to sail under the Eire flag. Under the Eire flag. Mexico is reported to be negotiating for the purchase of a number of German tankers and other vessels which have taken refuge in Mexican waters. It is believed that Germany owes Mexico anything up to $3 million as a result of the recent barter and cash deals. Japan is not going to allow German ships to be armed in Japanese ports, as this would infringe Japan's neutrality. This assurance has been given by the Japanese Admiralty to the British Naval Attache at Tokyo. Previously, a Japanese newspaper had reported that the German liner Scharnhorst was being armed at Kobe. The German government have apologized to the Netherlands government for a violation of neutrality by a German aeroplane, which flew over the province of Limburg on September the 8th. The German authorities say that the machine was a courier plane which lost its direction owing to fog. The pilot is stated to have been punished.
Ente Italiano Audizioni Radiofoniche, EIAR. Good evening, everybody. You have just heard The Charms of Rome, which brings to you the American Hour broadcast by shortwave stations, QRO3, 9.63 megacycles, 31.15 meters, QRO4, on 11.81 megacycles, 25.4 meters, and QRO6 on 15.3 megacycles, 19.61 meters. It is now exactly 1:31 and a half Italian time, which corresponds to 7:31 and a half p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Here is the Rome Radio News late evening bulletin. Dante. In a speech delivered here this afternoon, Chancellor Hitler recalled the precedents of the Dante question and Poland's persistent opposition to solve it by peaceful means. He also recalled that early in September, Il Duce made a fresh attempt towards attaining such a solution. While France, the Chancellor added, agreed to Il Duce's initiative, Great Britain refused and sent a proposal to Germany under the form of an ultimatum. Under others' instigation, Poland has chosen to go to war, preferring to listen to the lies of certain statesmen about the alleged inefficiency of the German army, the meager results of the Reich's four-year plan, and the alleged divergences between the German leaders. The truth is, continued the Führer, that the Polish army has collapsed in just 18 days, and more than 300,000 Poles have been taken prisoner. The Führer expressed his gratitude to the rank and file of the German army, and gave tribute to the bravery of the Polish army. He deplored, however, the fact that atrocities have been perpetrated in a number of cases and that orders have been given by the Polish government to the civilian population to strike the German army in the back. A situation has now been created, the Führer went on, by which it will be possible to negotiate with the true representatives of the Polish nation. Divergences between Germany and Russia are being talked of in France and Great Britain. Russia, the Führer said, will remain what she is, and Germany, in her turn, will continue to be what she is at present. Neither the Nazi or Russian regimes want to sacrifice a single man for the interests of the Western democracy. The two countries are convinced that they can proceed harmoniously. Referring to Germany's relations with France and Great Britain, the Chancellor stated that Germany has accepted her western frontiers and has no war designs against the two countries. As to Italy, the Führer declared that, thanks to his personal friendship with Il Duce and the close interests existing between the Italian and German peoples, he had succeeded in establishing an atmosphere of friendship and tranquility. The Chancellor declared that Poland, as created at Versailles, will not exist any longer. This, he asserted, is also Russia's will. England affirms, he said, that she does not want to fight the German people, but only wishes to fight the regime that rules them. The truth is that this regime is the expression of the will of the German people. It has been stated in England that the war will last for 3 years. I would like to hear, the Führer exclaimed, how the French poilu feels in this respect. In any case, I affirm that at the end of this war, Germany will never pronounce the word capitulation, even if the war should last 6 or 7 years or more. England has started fighting also against women and children. She ought to know, however, that we possess a weapon which no one will succeed in snatching from our hands. Here, Herr Hitler recalled that the German Air Force has spared the inhabited centers and will continue to do so if the civilians will not fire against soldiers, as is happening in Warsaw. The Chancellor restated the fact that Germany will fight in order that England's aims, namely the restoration of Poland and the separation of German territories from Germany, shall not materialize. The Chancellor concluded his speech by conveying his gratitude to the German people for their attitude in these days and by saluting the citizens of Danzig who will never be abandoned by Germany. Danzig, the Führer said, was German, has remained German, and will remain German as long as the German people will exist. Moscow. The Russian war bulletin issued this morning says that the Russian troops continued to throw back the Polish forces yesterday. The Russians occupied in western White Russia the town of Szwęczany, the Lida railroad junction, the town of Nowogródek, the hamlet of Orlia on the Niemen River, the towns of Slonin and Volkovik, and the railroad station of Wagledykty, situated on the railroad line of Minsk to Brest-Litovsk in western Ukraine. The bulletin adds the Russians seized the railroad junction of Sany and the towns of Luk, Halik, Stanislavov, Krasne, and Bubsa. The Russian avant-garde is closing in on Lemberg and Vilno. Berlin. The German war bulletin issued this morning states that the collapse and capitulation of the scattered or surrounded remnants of the Polish army is going on rapidly. The Battle of the Dzura River is nearing its conclusion. In this battle, the bulletin goes on, the Germans have captured 50,000 prisoners and an immense war booty, the inventory of which has not yet been finished. A small Polish contingent has been annihilated to the northwest of Lemberg. On this occasion, 10,000 Poles were made prisoner. The Germans have demanded the surrender of Lemberg. Since no emissary of the Polish command of Warsaw has presented himself before the German lines, the bulletin adds, operations against Warsaw have been resumed. The Poles are defending the city regardless of more than 1 million civilians living in it. The German Air Force carried out a few attacks yesterday. Its activity as a whole on the Eastern Front is no more necessary. Regarding the Western Front, the bulletin says that there were only weak artillery duels and patrol clashes in the region of Saarbrücken. No air combats have taken place. The bulletin concludes by stating that the British Admiralty's announcement concerning the sinking of the aircraft carrier Courageous has been confirmed by the report of the commander of the U-boat which torpedoed the ship. Paris. The French Morning War Bulletin states that there was a partial attack by the Germans in the region east of the Sarre River. The attack has been repulsed. The Evening Bulletin says that a German attack in the region east of Blyth has been repulsed. Great activity on the part of German aviation has been noticed in the same sector. London. 579 men of the Courageous crew lost their lives when the aircraft carrier sank. It was officially announced this evening. On board the ship at the time it was sunk, there were 90 officers and 1,170 men. 70 officers and 611 men were rescued. The ship's commander was seen at his post on the bridge up to the time that the ship went down. He is amongst the missing. News has been received this evening that a convoy of large merchant ships was attacked by a German submarine. When a British seaplane appeared, however, the U-boat desisted from the attack and submerged. London. The Ministry of Information announced that the British auxiliary mine layers, Lord Minto and Arleta, 170 tons each, have been sunk. The crews have been picked up by another mine layer. London. The conviction is expressed in London political circles that there will be no declaration of war against Russia by Great Britain and France. The British government, it is stated, would confine itself to making a formal protest against the accomplished fact without taking any binding steps. Moscow.
The semi-official paper Pravda says that the advance of the Russian forces in Ukrainian and White Russian territories is accompanied by manifestations of rejoicing on the part of the population. The paper also stresses the fact that the Moscow government has announced that it will maintain its neutrality towards the country with which it is in diplomatic relations. Belgrade. The Yugoslav government has decided to resume its diplomatic relations with Russia. Bucharest. All members of the Polish government and their families have now settled in Romania. Marshal Smigliewicz is due at Craiova, where he will reside in the mansion of a Romanian millionaire. The President of the Polish Republic has arrived at Bicac in the Carpathians and is residing in the Royal Hunting Lodge there as a guest of King Charles. All the Polish officials and notables now in Romania will have to give them their pledge not to carry out any political activity while they remain in Romanian territory. Additional Polish military airplanes landed in Romania today. They were seized by the Romanian military authorities and their crews interned. Paris. Political quarters confirm the news that the President of the Polish Republic and all members of the Polish government will move from Bucharest to Paris shortly. The Polish ambassadors to Washington and Moscow will do likewise. The forthcoming journey of the Turkish foreign minister to Moscow is being watched with undisguised concern in Paris owing to its possible development. London. Australia's Prime Minister and the Minister for Defence told in the Parliament today that no Australian troops will be dispatched to Europe, since the London government has recognised that Australia's best contribution at this moment is that of looking after her own protection. Tokyo. British shipping has ceased to appear over the Far Eastern Seas. Copenhagen. At the conclusion of their conference, the representatives of the countries of the Oslo Group issued a communique in which, after restating their neutrality, they expressed their determination to defend their rights to maintain their traditional commercial relations with all countries, including belligerent ones. The communique says that the Oslo Group countries, through consultations with belligerent countries, are confident that they will reach an accord which respects their commercial relations. The communique concludes by stating that the neutrality of these countries aims at the preservation of general interests and the eventual conciliation among the belligerents. Cairo. The Egyptian premier had a long and cordial conversation with the Italian minister today. Tokyo. The Italian ambassador to Tokyo, Signor Alghisi, has visited the Prime Minister, General Abe, with whom he had a talk on the European situation. Rome. Signor Mussolini has received Marshal Enrico Caviglia, who is just back from an inspection of the Italian Western Frontier, and has discussed military questions with him. Kaunas. The widow of Marshal Petrovsky has reached Kaunas in company with her two daughters.
We take you now to London, England.
Good evening. Britain has now been 17 days at war. Any hopes which a few faint hearts may have held, Hitler would show any sign of weakening, have been dispelled by a speech at Danzig this afternoon. Not that there are any faint hearts in high places or low places either in Britain. The government's announcement this morning that despite the Russian attack on the corpse of Poland, Britain will fight on, voiced the determination of everyone in this country. There can be no turning back. Britain and France have put their hands to the plow of war, and will drive a straight furrow through victory. I listened on the radio this afternoon to Hitler's speech. There seemed to be less of the rant and noise that one usually associates with his public oratory. It sounded like a subdued furrow, like one who realized that he had a stern task before him. To do him justice, there was no sign of faltering. His history may have been false, as indeed it was shown to be by a British commentator tonight, who confined himself to quoting from the furrow's speeches, proving out of his own mouth how he had gone back on all his previous declarations. Perhaps his own people have shorter memories, but some of them must remember what he has said about his new Russian comrades and wonder. His own words today, Russia remains Bolshevist and Germany National Socialist, contrast strangely with his former declarations about the impossibility of Bolshevism living in the same Europe with reborn Germany. I suppose you want to hear from me what Britain thinks of the Russian-German alliance. Well, the man in the street, and the men in authority, I think, take very much to the view that has been expressed in the American press that Russia is playing the noble part of jackal to Germany's lion. She's eating the offal that Germany is no use for. Prostrate Poland is being devoured by the twin aggressors, and Germany, as the lion, who has after all made the kill, has taken the choicest morsel. That, as I have said, is a popular point of view. But there's another which is worth stating. That is that Russia may double-cross her new partner, and she double-crossed the Allies when she conducted military conversations supposed to be leading to an alliance with Britain, France, and Poland, while at the same time behind closed doors, fixing up her pact with Germany. The basis of this theory is that Russia fears to have Germany as a too close neighbor, and that she has seized this opportunity to prevent it at a minimum cost. Germany, because of her involvement in the West, has had to pay a high price, which on the face of it means the abandonment of her ambitions in the Ukraine and in White Russia. These territories have fallen to Russia in the fourth partition of Poland, and there may be some significance in the fact that Russia has declared that her bargain with Germany does not affect her neutrality in the Western war. We shall see whether that proves to be true or not. I shouldn't be surprised if it should, for Stalin is a realist who is not going to fight for even a comrade like Germany unless he can get something out of it. And it's not at present apparent that he stands to gain anything by taking part in the war in the West. It has been said that he can supply Germany with food and raw materials. Maybe he can. But we have been told by all the experts, German as well as Western, that he is not enough for his own people. Remember, he is armed and let loose his army of peasants, who might not like it if they saw their fathers and mothers starve to feed the Germans, whom we've been taught for years to hate. Remember, it was the revolting peasant soldiers that brought down the Tsardom. Perhaps Stalin has a better sense of history than Hitler. Maybe tomorrow we shall know more about the British reaction when Prime Minister Chamberlain makes his third report to Parliament on the progress of the war. He may or may not have some new information, but I can assure you that he repeats Britain's determination to fight on to the end. So far, Marshal Goering's boast that the Polish war would be cleaned up in 4 weeks looks like being justified. Poland cracked more quickly than was expected, and there's no use any longer in disguising the fact that she's finished for the time being. Her armies have been defeated, and her government has fled the country. The fourth partition of Poland is underway. It's now the task of the Allies to fight through to a victory, which will restore not only Poland, but Czechoslovakia, and perhaps even Austria. I don't know how much you are hearing about conditions inside Germany and her new territories. We here get reports of seething rebellion and sabotage. We're told of strikes and risings in the great munitions factories of Skoda and Brno in former Czechoslovakia, and even of unrest in Germany itself. We hear on the radio the broadcast of the German Freedom Party purporting to come from Germany. Probably they do, but I would warn you that all such reports should be received with a grain of salt. It took 4 years to break the morale of the German people in the last war, and it's not likely to be broken this time in a few months. If the Allies develop their power, it now seems likely, it will take less than 4 years this time. How much less is a question that no one can answer. Certainly there are more seeds of disaffection than there were then. But against that, Hitler has presented his people with a cheap victory in Poland, which must have had an excellent effect on their morale and must have helped the Hitler legend to convince stability. On the Western Front, the French are pursuing their methodical attack on the C-3 line and have achieved some fairly notable successes, but more from the psychological than from the material point of view. They've captured a stretch of the no-man's land between the Maginot and Tilsy lines and have held their gains. That's psychologically good, for it means that the French are fighting on German soil, which never happened in the Great War, and which the German people were promised never would happen. Materially, however, it's only the preparation for the real attack. The French and British seem to have established supremacy in the air so far, but the bulk of the German Air Force has now been released from Poland, and we may expect stiffer air resistance. British and French both are confident that they have better planes and better men and can maintain their supremacy. We are still in the dark about the whereabouts and activities of the British Army. We know that the Air Force is in France and in action, and the Navy is active in all the seven seas. But all we know of the Army is that it is in France and has taken up its position. Where those positions are, and whether it has been in action or not, we have not been told. Wherever it is, I think it can be counted on to give a good account of itself. For the first regiments to cross the Channel must have been those of the highly trained regular army, whose forebears, the old contemptibles, acquitted themselves so gloriously in Flanders in 1914. Perhaps the British Army is preparing a surprise, both for the Germans and for the people at home. At sea, Britain has suffered a heavy blow in the loss of Courageous. The aircraft carrier sunk a couple of days ago by a German submarine. After all, however, such losses are to be expected. It's the work of the Navy to take risks, and the loss of a comparatively old vessel is not in any sense crippling. So far, about half the crew of 1,200 are reported saved, and there are, as hoped, more who have been picked up by rescuing vessels. It seems pretty well established that the submarine which powered the fatal torpedo was herself destroyed. One notable feature of the submarine warfare is the better manners and greater humanity of the German commanders since the fatal blunder of the sinking of the Athenia. They now seem to be doing their best to put the crews of the vessels to sink in safety. It would seem that Grand Admiral Raeder has seen the folly of this furlough for sank policy. It's also notable that there have been no air raids on the great cities of the West. London has had three air raid alarms, two caused by the failure to identify friendly planes, and the character of the planes which gave rise to the third is doubtful. Paris, too, has had a few alarms, but not one plane has got through to either city, and not one bomb has been dropped. This is attributed in most quarters here to a healthy fear on the part of the Germans of what might happen to Berlin and other German cities if London or Paris were bombed. These alarms have proved an excellent test of the discipline and courage of the civilian population. There's been no panic and no rush for shelter. People went quietly to the shelters and spent the time until they all clear, chatting, playing cards, reading, and so on. And about the only notable effect was a half-humorous irritation about being dragged out of bed to go underground. And now for a little life relief. The British always make a joke, even of their misfortune. And the latest popular song, based on a young soldier's letter home from the front, runs something like this. Mother dear, I'm having fun, and I'm sending you the T-Street line to hang your washing on. Tell Dad old Hitler's on the run. I'm sending you the T-Street line to hang his nightshirt on. Thank you and good night.